Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 224. That's 224 of the Kaiju Podcast. I am your host, Chad O'Brien, and with me is the ever jubilant Jason Gibson.
Hello.
That is his most jubilant. I'm going to have to ask you to calm down right now, Mr. Gibson.
It's nice to be back.
That's right. So we seem to be in an on-again, off-again kind of relationship with both Masters Gibson and Charlton. So Jason is with us today. Tomorrow, he will be put back in his little box, not to be released for another 2 weeks, I'm sure.
Please put some air holes in it this time.
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's a whole deal. Have to get the screwdriver to, like, poke the holes, and then there's plastic wrap and
all kinds. I don't want to go back in the dark.
It puts the lotion on its skin, or else it gets the hose again. We've been over this, Jason. So, how are you feeling?
A lot better. A lot better. I've been sick all week, actually. So, yeah, today pretty good. Had a nice day. Had a good lunch. Feeling good.
Yeah, it is that season. Flu is just running rampant all over Japan right now. I had a close little scare, but apparently I am healthier than ever. Or at least I'm not sick. Maybe not quite that healthy, but
congratulations.
Yes.
You're not dead.
I am not dead, and that's always something to celebrate.
Well,
you know what? Yes, you know what is dead though.
No,
the street date for Nintendo's Switch console. The street date has been shot, cut, and basically left dying, while retailers are basically handing out the units like candy. No, just a few people have managed to get their hands on Nintendo's lovely little console, and so you've seen a lot of pictures. You might have seen a lot of pictures out on Twitter, but unfortunately, as we already knew, Nintendo is not packing in any kind of software whatsoever, including any applications or video software or anything like that, with their handy dandy little console. So if you like videos of people setting up their UI, man, this week is wonderful for you.
So, like, do you think just Nintendo just saw this coming? They're like, man, people are just gonna sell this out the back door, so we're just gonna fuck with their heads. No games.
I sincerely doubt it, but I honestly would not put it past them, because yeah, breaking street dates is an old tradition dating back to Roman times, when you
could buy your Xbox -3.
That's right, or the Trojan horse console version 3.0. was put out too early, and then it turned out there were a lot of bugs, also known as
wood
soldiers. I was gonna say soldiers who take over your city, but whatever.
It's bugs, come on, man, it's made of wood. Bugs.
Well, yeah, but I'm pretty sure the Romans wouldn't really care about just a few bugs. Soldiers, on the other hand,
fair enough.
But to be fair, I don't know what kind of bugs they have over on the European continent. But it seems, at least for now, there are no bugs in the Switch's UI. You can press buttons and the machine will respond, and you can pair your controllers. But for right now, that's all. That's all you can do.
The important question.
Yep.
What color is the UI, Chad? What color is it?
It's all kinds of colors. Apparently, something that was confirmed through this, I mean, for whatever it's worth, themes are a thing for the Nintendo Switch. Just like probably anyone was expecting by this point, since it is also supposed to be a handheld console, and the 3DS already supports themes. I honestly don't know if the Wii U does, but there you go.
Are these themes going to be priced, or are they free, customizable?
I mean, if they do it just like the 3DS, then some will be free and some will cost money. I mean, that's how every company does it. Sony does it with their PS4, Microsoft right. does it with Xbox One. Yeah. So, yeah. And of course, the free themes are always kind of, you know, lower in quality. Right. Unless it's some kind of special deal you got with a game or something like that. Some of PlayStation 4's dynamic themes are actually quite nice. Like, I've got the Area X theme from Res Infinite currently going. So, that's yeah, cool. It is lovely. It's golden with little red ships flying everywhere. Yeah.
Now, have you actually watched the videos of these people tinkering with the UI?
I watched one, and then I watched 10 seconds of another and realized it was the exact same thing, and okay. I said, okay.
Was there anything actually interesting there, or was it just like...
Absolutely okay? Not. Nope.
Okay. Nope. All right.
I mean, there's a screenshots folder, a news folder, which... I don't know. The news folder... I mean, it kind of seemed... I didn't see anybody actually tapping on the news items, but it kind of seemed like they have more of those videos that they had when they were announcing like the parental controls. Which was kind of a cute little video with Bowser and Bowser Jr. Or I don't know what the tiniest Bowser is called. I think Bowser Jr. might be somebody else. I do not know Mario lore. Okay, but anyway, yeah, that was a cute little video. So if they have more of those videos, that's, you know, it's something. It's cute. But yeah, I didn't see anybody actually looking at the news. But. Nothing significant, certainly. We will have to wait for more things to come to the console.
Yeah. What's the street date for the first game, Chad?
That would be 3-3.
3-3.
3-3. All right. That is 3-3. In other words, we are less than 2 weeks away. So, nice. Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Gonna get Zelda Breath of the Wild, and speaking of things coming to the Switch, something else is coming to Nintendo's little console in the form of DLC.
Ooh.
That's right. So, I want to clarify something here. There's been a lot of news reports this week that Nintendo is, for the first time, releasing DLC for a game, and that's incredibly misleading, because Nintendo has been in the DLC market for quite a while now, not in as major a way as some of the other companies, like, you know, any of the publishers for Sony and Microsoft, but certainly if you ever played Super Smash Brothers, then you know that they had DLC for the different characters. You had to buy those individually, along with various DLC for other games, like Pikmin had DLC for new stages, Hyrule Warriors had its own characters DLC, Mario Kart had stages. Now, what I will say is that this is the first time that a game is getting a significant, like, a story expansion. That's something.
Yeah, and that's not just bits and bobs like you've gotten before, right?
Right.
So details, Chad, details of right. the story.
Right, so there are going to be two DLC packs, and it comes with a season pass. Now, this is far less egregious than some people might, you know, initially suspect. It's $20 for the season pass, which is not bad at all. But it says that there will be, let's see here, two new sets of downloadable content for the game immediately upon... This is perhaps egregious here. Immediately upon pre-purchase or purchase of the expansion pass, three treasure chests will appear in the game's Great Plateau area. One of the treasure chests will contain a shirt with a Nintendo Switch logo that Link can wear during his adventure.
What?
Yes.
What?
So for those unaware, Breath of the Wild, you do have various clothing that Link can put on, and they're supposed to give him various benefits or whatever, but a Nintendo Switch shirt.
What does that give him? The power of shilling?
I don't know. Yo, dog, I hear you like the Nintendo Switch, so we put the Nintendo Switch in your Nintendo Switch. Exhibit memes, right?
Yes.
Yeah, anyway, the other two will deliver useful items. I like how Nintendo clarified this. So the other two will deliver useful items, automatically meaning that the treasure chests are not useful items. But the first content pack is scheduled to launch this summer and will include the addition of a Cave of Trials challenge, a new hard mode, and a new feature for the in-game map. The second content pack will launch in holiday 2017 and adds new challenges that will let players enjoy a new dungeon and a new original story. The expansion pass will be available for both, blah, 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 Nintendo Switch and Wii U. But
So it sounds like the first expansion really isn't too much of a story. It's just like adding some new modes and stuff, right?
Right. I mean, the Cave of Trials sounds kind of interesting, but yeah, that's a challenge. I wonder what this new feature is for the in-game map. I mean, it says it's for the map itself, which is kind of...
So that's like the final, like Ganon's Castle or something, yeah. Right?
I mean, it says it's for the map. I mean, like, you know, the overworld map or something like that. Like, what are we not able to zoom in from the start? You have to buy the DLC to zoom in on the map? Is that what it is?
Maybe it's a bird's eye view zoom out mode.
Aonuma!
Yeah. Maybe it's a side-scrolling beat-em-up mode.
But yeah, this new hard mode also sounds kind of interesting. I have heard people complain because, you know, hard mode sounds like a ridiculous thing to put into a DLC pack. But I am going to play devil's advocate here. This is kind of weird. If all they're doing is tweaking numbers, then this is a terrible thing to include in DLC. Because it's literally just, okay, this monster once had 100 health, now it has 200 health. That's hard mode. But if it's actually something different, for example, several games have examples where monsters and items and various other things are switched around. For example, Resident Evil 7. I'm currently trying my Madhouse run. That's the hard mode there. And several items do suddenly switch.
Well, I think an even better example would be just the Master Quest for Classic Ocarina of Time.
Oh, yeah, you know? That's right. Yep.
Yeah, like where they just completely redid all the dungeons and made them harder.
But you're also arguing in line with the people who are complaining about the hard mode being DLC, and that the Master Mode was not a DLC. It was just
a completely new game, wasn't
it? Yeah, I mean... Yes, but what I'm saying is, it was still included, right?
Well, not in the original.
True. But who had the original, seriously?
My hand is raised right now. You can't see it, but it's up.
I can't see it. Therefore, it does not count. That 3DS version is still amazing. Get that if you haven't. Get it.
Yeah.
Get it. Yep. I'm not too upset about this. Again, it's $20. That's not terrible. It's not amazing. Games are honestly supposed to be much more expensive in current times anyway. It's amazing that they are still $60 retail when it costs so much more than it used to cost them 10 years ago when the prices were still the same. This story expansion, there's no details about what's going to happen. Some people have been speculating that you might actually be able to play as Zelda in the story expansion because she's kind of featured pretty prominently in the expansion pass image. But, we don't know. So
maybe that's the new mode for the final map. you can play as Zelda.
I think you're misinterpreting here what it's talking about, the map. I think it's talking about the actual piece of paper map that you open up in the game.
Ah, fine. Fine.
I think.
Take it.
I think. I hope you are right, but I hope your misunderstanding is correct. But yeah. Anyway, that's that. Now let's shift. I don't know a good way to segue into this, but let's talk about PewDiePie.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. So PewDiePie, for people who don't know, wait. I'm sorry, there are no people who don't know PewDiePie out there. No, he is a YouTube content creator, most well-known for originally for his games, but now he's moved into various other kinds of content. And it is this content that is apparently landing him in hot water right now with his sponsors or producers or...
Yeah, something like that. Like, he got a reality TV show. Produced by a subdivision of Disney. What's the name of the company? I forget.
Maker.
Yeah, it's like a subdivision of Disney.
Right.
For helping online people create media.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah. Yep. So what happened here?
Well, it turns out PewDiePie thinks that anti-Semitism is hilarious and Disney doesn't think so. Yeah, so he's done it multiple times already, but this most recent time he went through an online service, I forget the name of it,
Fiverr,
that's it, where you can like pay people from like other countries just to do stuff,
basically. Well, they're in the States too. It's
well, yeah, anywhere, like, yeah. You can sign up for it, but I think mostly it's people from abroad, because the pittance that you pay the people is worth more in other countries. Yeah. So you pay them just to do stuff and like whatever, and they send you a video of it. And so he paid some two guys in what country was it? Somewhere like India. Yeah, yeah, I was thinking Southeast Asia. Some two guys in India to hold up a sign, basically saying like "kill all Jews." And like dance around with it and put it on his YouTube channel. And it was just kind of like a step too far for Disney. Just a bit over the line.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Now let's unpack this a little bit. So all over the internet this week, we've seen all kinds of media basically kind of... taking a dump on PewDiePie right now, because they're claiming, you know, he is an anti-Semite. Now, I am staunchly opposed to that kind of characterization. I am no fan of PewDiePie's. I have watched maybe 5 of his videos over his 5 years on YouTube. But at the same time, from what I see, he is the type of person who goes for this push the envelope kind of humor, and it's certainly not my style. Let me clarify. I do love humor that doesn't exactly conform to political correctness. Like, I love David Cross and people like that. But he's just not funny, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah, I don't think he is an anti-Semite. I just think he thinks things are funny that are not funny.
Yep. And where the press has gotten this completely messed up is that I've seen a lot of the articles about him because of this fallout, and I watched some of his videos that were related to this, so I guess now I've seen like 10 of his videos. But some of the videos that the press is referring to are actually videos he uses to kind of mock the way the press talks about him, which is just some kind of like weird Inception stuff. So there are press articles right now of him in like a kind of not Nazi regalia, but some kind of like military uniform he's wearing. Like, it's more green instead of black, but yeah. Anyway, he's wearing like these military things and he's watching like a Hitler speech and he's like, yeah, if the, like the media probably just looks at the title of this video and looks at a few images and thinks that I'm a Nazi supporter. Like, I'm just sitting here in my uniform and watching Hitler's speeches, and then he cuts to that kind of thing. And that is literally like the image they use for these things that is like, yeah, he's an anti-Semite. Like, and of course, yeah, he blasted against that in his latest video, where he kind of eschews his normal personality. He begins his new video by saying that this video probably won't be seen by my fans, so I'm just going to talk like a normal person. It's kind of like if Stephen Colbert got rid of his personality on the old show he
used to do. The Colbert Report.
Colbert Report, there you go. Of course, he doesn't have that personality anymore for the late night show, but yeah. I am fully in favor of everyone having their own right to speech, and of course, you are welcome to make all the jokes you want, even if they are hilarious, or if they fall completely flat, like Felix's do. Felix right. being PewDiePie's real name. But at the same time, like I completely agree with Disney and also YouTube for dumping him, because as anyone who has any knowledge of how the entertainment system works. Once you sign one of those contracts, you are no longer a bearer of free speech. Your speech is kind of limited to what the network will allow. At least as far as like your own personal, or not your personal, but your PewDiePie channel goes. So PewDiePie's channel it's produced by Disney, and that reality show was done by YouTube, and they obviously just don't want that kind of image kind of mixed up with them anymore.
They're a business, you know. Yeah, they've got to keep a proper public face, and they're well within their rights to dump him over this.
The only thing
I would say is what you said earlier, just the media skewering him for things that he didn't really do.
Yep.
That's something he doesn't really deserve.
Yeah, and I mean, it's probably like Disney and YouTube both dumped him, and then the press took that as a sign that they think he's an anti-Semite, maybe, or something like that, and just ran with it.
That's just sensationalism, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, the media is sensationalist anyway. The leaks are real, but the news is fake. don't trust the fake news media. Unless, of course, it's political, then please trust your
the media is America's greatest enemy.
It's yes,
endlessly bad.
Yes. Right. Please support your news outlets like New York Times and CNN. don't trust them when it comes to YouTube gaming personalities. Because they probably don't know what they're talking about most of the time. Anyway, that's that. And now, let's move to something lighter. The Vietnam War.
Yes. Oh, that's a special place in my heart.
That's
special
right.
Place.
Right.
Right next to the shrapnel.
Right, so Apocalypse Now is back in the news, because it's completely contemporary for all of us. Right?
Would you say it's in the now?
I see what you're going for. But Apocalypse Now is back in the news. Well, let me rewind a little bit. About 3 weeks ago, Apocalypse Now showed up on Kickstarter in a game form. Now, this was kind of surprising, mostly because There are several titles on Kickstarter, we've talked about this before, that are licensed projects that people have no business putting up. Like, I'm going to make a Marvel game without Marvel's permission, or something like that. But, yeah, here comes Apocalypse Now, and lo and behold, Francis Ford Coppola is behind it. That was surprising enough, but it turns out that... the game just did not look good. Several trailers and screenshots came out, and characters look very wooden. Now, of course, this is all, you know, pre-production stuff, but it doesn't look good. And the fact is, the game would not be socially relevant, as we were kind of alluding to earlier. It's a remnant of an era that no longer holds any resonance.
It deals with topics and issues that, yeah, like you said, are just not relevant in what we're dealing with right now, today.
Yeah, I mean, to those who don't know, Apocalypse Now is a seminal movie of its time, all about like the brutalities of war and like the psychological toll it can hold on us. It's not like an action thriller, man goes into the jungle alone and takes on 800 men by himself. It's not that kind of movie. It's very slow, but it's also very thought provoking
It's a great movie. It's a great, great movie. And if you haven't seen it, you should see it. Everybody should see it. But it's just, you know, it's another time.
Yep.
You know, I don't imagine 15-year-olds going out and saying, ooh, that Apocalypse Now. That totally speaks to me.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, even if you wanted to make a game like that, it's already out. Go play Spec Ops The Line. That is all about soldiers realizing just how brutal they can be in a war. I wanted to bring this out because when you're trying to write up a game for Kickstarter or any kind of crowdfunding campaign, you obviously need to have a pitch. A pitch that's going to be entertaining, intriguing, draw you in, and also tell you about what the game is going to be, because you're asking people to put up money. But Apocalypse Now's write-up is, it goes places. It goes a lot of places, and
it goes a few places.
Yeah,
I don't really want to go to.
Yeah, if you we're going to read through it here, and
lay it on me, Chad.
Yeah, and I will be surprised if you can tell me what kind of game it is by the time we're done. I'm just going to go through this right from the site. So we have here, Apocalypse Now is going to be a video game. You are an assassin. You've been given the most dangerous, most secret, and most controversial special forces mission in U.S. history. But this game is not Call of Duty Vietnam. You will sneak, you will hide, you will gather resources, you will build your character, you will kill when necessary. We're making a first-person's perspective survival and horror role-playing game. Tension, tactical decision-making, some outcomes determined by player skill and some by character skill, psychological decision-making in your dialogues with other characters, and a heavy emphasis on an RPG-like narrative with branching outcomes. You will explore the jungles and rivers of Vietnam in first person's perspective. You join a crew of rock and rollers with one foot in the grave. It's like Fallout New Vegas on acid in the middle of the Vietnam War. Your ultimate mission is to assassinate Colonel Kurtz, a rogue American officer who is accused of forming a private army and operating totally beyond the pale of any acceptable human conduct. Combat is often your last resort. The wise soldier will avoid the ever-looming enemy at all costs. Maintaining resources and relationships is key to your survival and your success. You will play Captain Willard, and you have a mission. But between receiving your mission in the hotel room and meeting Colonel Kurtz, how you journey upriver on PBR Street Gang, that's your boat, is up to you. You will engage in dialogue like in most role-playing games, but you are a Special Forces operative, so your dialogue will be like Captain Willard's dialogue. You aren't chatty, you get to the point, but you are friendly and charming when you want to be. You are alienated. You are entertaining alternate points of view about the war and the world, but you are also an assassin.
What?
Yep.
What did that even mean?
Yep. What? You are an assassin.
You are an assassin.
Yep.
So this is like, it sounds like Far Cry Vietnam minus all the fighting.
Right, but you are an assassin. But you will kill when necessary.
And it's like most RPGs.
You are charming and engaging.
You talk. You talk to people. Because there's some RPGs where you don't talk to people.
Right.
Ever.
Yep. You are charming and engaging, but you are also alienated.
But you're also alienated. And an assassin.
And an assassin. And Captain Willard. So your dialogue will be like Captain Willard. Like, I would hope so.
That would be weird if it wasn't.
Yes. Your dialogue will be like Uma Thurman. Like, okay.
Jesus.
And it's also a psychological horror game with survival and material or resource gathering elements.
Did Francis Ford Coppola have a stroke and then decide to write a game treatment? What the hell was that?
I have no clue. Now, Apocalypse Now, the video game, kind of did not see much success on its Kickstarter page. as one might kind of guess after reading that treatment.
What did it top out at, do you know?
So it topped out at 172,000.
Really? I'm surprised it got that much.
It was looking for 900,000. Now, the thing is, they got 2,700 backers. 2,711, if you're being technical. But they realized that they weren't doing very well on the website, and so they decided, what was the solution? To leave Kickstarter, a well-known place where people would go to find a crowdfunding page like this, and make their own funding. Now, to be fair, they got the right URL for it. It's apocalypsenow.com. If you go to that page, the current funding... Oh, my page just changed. Right, the current funding is about 200,000, which is more than they got on the Kickstarter. But there is a significant reduction in the number of pledges. Only 610. 609, actually.
Wait, they have $200,000 from 600 people?
Which leads me to believe that they probably seeded it themselves.
Dang.
Right. Yep. And not only that, but they have moved their goal from $900,000 to $5,900,000.
Whoa! Somebody's aiming high.
That's right. But to be fair, they have pushed back their deadline, so it is no longer 30 days like you would get on Kickstarter. It is, currently there are 455 days remaining, so you have a year and a half.
Wow. Maybe they're trying to fund it like a movie, you know, like getting like actual like investors.
Oh.
And they're just doing this to, I don't know, seem like a game.
I doubt it. You can't be an investor because Fig went through this whole thing when they were setting up, have to be accredited. You have to have the various licenses, and then anybody investing in your product would have to be an accredited investor, and all kinds of different legal hoops you would have to jump through just to do that. But, yeah. So, Some crazy stuff.
The
highest pledge tier is $1 million.
Whoa!
Let's go through this. So okay. This is the Hollow Man. You get the physical installation edition. I would hope you get the physical edition. Plus 10 collector's edition boxes of Apocalypse Now, plus 100 digital copies.
Okay.
Everything you get in the previous tiers, I'm not going to read through all those, so I assume it's posters and stuff, probably. A month with the game team. Airfare not included.
What does that mean?
Yeah, do you, like, sleep in their bunkers?
Do they fly you out to the studio and you just sort of hang around the office for a month?
I don't know.
What?
Special one-of-a-kind Family Coppola Hideaway Adventure Package.
You get to use the Coppola family vacation home?
Nope. Here we go. The Family Coppola Hideaway Adventure Package. 10-day Central America safari includes accommodations, in-country transportation, and some meals and excursions. I love this. Beverages not included.
You had to pay for your own beer?
We paid for the hotel room, the food, whatever. But yeah, beverages. You paid
them $1 million. They're not going to pay for your beer?
Yep.
Jesus.
Yeah. Unique prop from the Apocalypse Now set. And it says, not even a part of their fucking army anymore. I have no clue what that means. I don't even see a description. But there you go. Not even a part of their fucking army anymore. And lastly, surprise reward.
Surprise reward.
Yes. Oh, wow. My.
Oh.
Yep. That's a game. Well, you know, if you've got a spare million, now you know where to go.
who set this up? Like, who's doing this?
That would be Zoetrope or whatever Coppola's team is called. Yeah, so there you go. Adventures in crowdfunding, people. Adventures in crowdfunding. And that's pretty much going to do it for the news this week.
That's going to do it for me this week. Jesus.
Yeah, just hearing that has tuckered little Jason Gibson out. But you can't leave yet, Jason. We've got games to talk about.
You
have one game, I have one game, and together that makes games. So, there you go.
By the power of our game combined, we have games.
Games. Games galore, as some would say, or as no one would really say, would just do. But, would you like to go first, or shall I?
I'll go first, it's fine. I played the demo for Drifting Lands. It's out on early release on Steam right now. And it's sort of like the old shareware demos where it was actually like a really good demo. Like you got like the first tenth of the game or so. It's a side-scrolling shooter in the vein of like a Gradius or something like that. So the base gameplay is you have a spaceship and you fly around through a side-scrolling level and you blow up other enemies. But the interesting part of the game is you actually start in a hangar. So you have, it's a kind of an RPG-ish element to it where you can pick from three different base ships at the beginning of the game. And each one has different attributes. One's more tanky, one's faster. One's kind of a balance between the two, and you can actually outfit each different piece on your ship. So like you can add more or different kinds of armor plating. You could switch out the weapon for, I saw at least 20 different kinds of weapons that you could find in the game of varying degrees of quality. You can change your engine, you can change your shields, and each piece that you put on your on your ship actually like will affect the stats of your ship too. It's kind of like a piece of armor in like Diablo or something, where like you can find a sword that'll give you plus to int, or this sword will give you plus to strength. And the same way in this game, like you can find a laser that'll increase the structure of your ship, or you can find a different laser that'll increase the navigation of your ship. So like you can sort of mix and match and customize your ships that way. And you go out on missions and you earn money to come back and spend on more upgrades for your ship, or buy like a better version of your ship. And as you go, you get increasingly difficult levels. I only got, like I said, through mission 10 because it's a demo. And the interesting thing is actually it's kind of a bit procedurally generated too, because the enemies are random in every level, except for like bosses and things. But other than that, the enemies are generated randomly. It's actually really good if you kind of miss the old side-scrolling shooters, which I do. I haven't really seen many of those out recently. I think the last one I really enjoyed was Einhander, like back on PS1. So yeah, it's quite good set on Steam right now. Early access, go pick it up, take a look.
Yeah, I'm watching like the trailer right now. There is some real bullet hell shit going on.
Oh yeah. It gets kind of wacky, and I actually had a couple of problems with that too, because some of the bullets are really small and kind of blend into the background. It's hard to see. But yeah, and the variety of weapons that you can get is actually like pretty big too. Like you can just get the straight front pea shooter, you can get one that sort of sprays gun all over the screen but like in a wave up and down, you can get one that's like a split shot, you can get one that's like a shotgun that only shoots out in front of your ship. So like there's all different like methods and things of shooting, and yeah, it gets really, really bullet helly. And I said I've only been through the first 10 levels, but that last level was pretty hard, and I think it goes up to, right now they're planning to 100 levels.
Ooh.
So yeah.
Yeah, okay. I've been playing my own flying game. It's called Fly Wrench. Just in case you ever wanted to, you know, combine a wrench and a fly together.
It's flying wrench.
It is not, in fact, a flying wrench. It is. I don't know what it really is. So Fly Wrench is the latest game by Messhoff, which is the team that brought us Nidhogg, and will be bringing us Nidhogg 2 in just a little bit, I'm sure. It's a very hard game. It's one of those twitchy games, so that means I'm automatically not very good at it. But I am having fun with it. What it is you control a kind of a line segment, really. And
is it a wrench? Are you a wrench?
Nope, you're a line.
Okay,
you're just a line. I mean, it could be a wrench, but. So there are these levels. The levels are designed in like a 2D space, and you fly around your line segment. Again, you fly by flapping. It's kind of gravity controlled, right? So when you flap, you become red. That's important because throughout the level, as you're trying to get from start A to finish B, you have to pass through various lines that are in the stage. Some of these lines are red, and to pass through those lines, you have to be red. So you have to be flapping through those. Then other lines are white, and you have to be in your neutral position to pass through those. So it comes up with some interesting physics where, you know, you have to flap hard enough to get past these red lines, and then, you know, stop flapping to pass through this white line that's just past those, and then keep flapping again because there's more red and stuff like that. Then it kind of ups the challenge because there's also a spin move that you can do, which kind of boosts you. And the spin move turns you green. So now there are green lines that you have to pass through. So you have to flap, go neutral, spin, and then there are pink lines. You can't do anything with pink lines. They are just lines that you have to avoid. I'm going to say I kind of don't like those because they are constantly put in places where, you know, you're going to be bouncing around and moving around a lot. Like I said, it's a very twitch action game. So I hit those all the time.
Are these levels procedurally generated or
no,
or not?
No. They are set stages. Now, on the PC version, there is actually a level creator as well. But that is not on the PS4 version, which I'm actually playing. But apparently the PS4 version comes with its own special stages anyway. Although I'm sure on PC you can just create those stages. So, yeah. It's a very fun game, I will say, even though, like, I'm not very good at it. I am up to, like, the third world. I don't know how many worlds there are, but, every time you finish a certain amount, it says, like, okay, the next world is actually available now if you want to jump there. So, so I've been doing that. One other thing is that it's got, like, a weird kind of meta thing going on. I kind of don't want to spoil too much about it, but it seems that the whole game is about, like, some kind of hacking process. Like, I mean, you just get that kind of feeling from how it starts up. And throughout the game, like, whenever you start a new world, you're given various messages which are in some ways deep, but in some ways just like, huh? Kind of messages. Some of them are actual quotes. Like, there's a Cousteau, Jacques Cousteau quote.
Jacques Cousteau?
Yeah, there you go, that guy. There's some quotes by him, but there are, you know, I can't even remember the actual words, but it's like, you know, the... not the Cousteau quote, but there is joy in death, things like that. But it's very quirky. It's very fun. The music is amazing. I was sitting doing stuff while the main theme music was playing, and I was grooving along to that for a bit. It's cool, so I definitely recommend that, but we'll have a video and a review of that coming soon, I'm sure. And that's really all I've played, other than a whole bunch more Neo. Just as a kind of update, you know, Neo is still great, I'm loving it. I've actually started experimenting with different weapons. So I was doing sword and axe to begin with, but I've really gotten into the Kusarigama. To those who don't know, if you've ever seen, like, ninja weapons where there's, like, one hand is carrying a sickle and one hand is carrying a weight, that is the Kusarigama. So, I'm really digging that. Although I will say that having played a lot of it now, I'm pretty sure I'm over the halfway mark. There's... I'm kind of coming across, like, a lack of enemy variety. So a lot of enemies were introduced within the first few stages, but now it feels like I'm kind of getting one every new area, while the rest are just kind of, like, palette swaps, or different enemies get different kind of elemental bonuses or something like that. But still good, still liking the story, and it still looks beautiful, but... Cool. I hope to finish that soon so I can write a review, especially because of games that are coming out next week. So we're going to transition over to that, unless you have anything else to talk about.
I was just wondering how the difficulty on Neo stacks up against Dark Souls.
Okay, so against Dark Souls...
because that's the most direct comparison, right?
Right, but I would say it's about even. It takes me typically, some bosses I've one-shotted, some have taken up to about like 10 tries. I still say that in a very Ninja Gaiden way, having not played Ninja Gaiden, but hearing many stories about it, the first boss is definitely the most difficult. It's kind of the hump. And then once you get past that, every other boss is kind of just learn their patterns and you'll do fine. But sometimes the bosses have very gimmicky moves or one-shot things that can kind of catch you off guard and they'll kill you, but you kind of, you know, it's a learning experience. You're like, okay, right. Now I know to avoid that, right?
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. And typically, in a very Dark Souls fashion, even if you die against the boss, you usually regenerate in a shrine, which is just a quick shot away if you just run through it. But, right. Yeah. So, that's that. Now, like I said, let's go on to games that are coming out. There's not a whole lot this week, but what's coming out is pretty big. So, we have the Western release of Berserk and the Band of the Hawk. That is the kind of Musou-style Berserk game. I definitely dug that when it came out in Japan, because if there's any source material that really fits with Musou, it is Berserk, where Guts is constantly cleaving through hundreds of men at a time. But there's that. Halo Wars 2 is coming out, so if you've got your Xbox, then there you go. Or PC. But Ys Origin is going to PS4. I believe that is... I don't even know what entry that is in the Ys...
It's got to be close to 10, right?
Yeah. But it's actually like a prequel, so there you go. Yeah. It's all I remember is it takes like hundreds of years before Ys 1. So there's that. Other releases, we have A Pixel Story coming to PS4. Chime Sharp is coming to PS4. We talked about Chime Sharp a couple of months ago, I believe. Clouds and Sheep. I'm not sure what that is. It looks like a little puzzle game with clouds and sheep, funnily enough. Malicious Fallen, along with Mervels, a VR adventure. So, if you've got your VR, there you go. Night in the Woods. Psychonauts in the Rhombus of Ruin. I know I kind of teased you by saying Psychonauts, and you were really excited to hear me say two.
Mm-mm.
But then I said...
And then I wasn't.
Yeah, Psychonauts in the Rhombus of Ruin. This is a VR-only... I'm not sure if it's really an experience or a game. I believe it's a game, based on what Tim Schafer has said. But we'll have to see. I'll probably be picking that up. I do have my PS4 VR, so Typo Man Revised is coming to PS4, so that's a game about like a character made out of letters and going through an entire like world made out of letters, so that's pretty cute. Vaccine for PS4, Warhammer 40K Death Watch for PS4, and Warhammer Quest for PS4. So if you like your Warhammer, Then get to the PS4. Go for it. Mm. And that's all the games that are coming out next week. Along with... in Japan, we have Nier Automata. So I will be picking that up and hopefully have a couple of gameplay impressions for you by next week. Along with that, you can head on over to our website at kaijupop.com and check out reviews and, you know, thought pieces, videos, all that good stuff. You can also follow us on Twitter at kaijupop or on YouTube at kaijupop. Seeing a theme here. And if you want to follow me, I am at Kyoshi Banzai on Twitter, where Jason is
at Gibsaurus.
And that is going to do it for this week. Thank you for listening. This has been episode 224 of the Kaiju Popcast. See you next week.
See ya.